Hello and welcome to the May 2014 edition of The President's Perspective. It's a monthly half-hour chat with the President and CEO of Texas A&M University Commerce, Dr. Dan Jones. I'm Jared Knight. Last month, we had an opportunity to visit with Texas 4th Congressional District Representative Ralph Hall at NPR's headquarters in Washington, D.C. You can listen to a recording of that episode anytime by visiting ketr.org. This month, we're taking the opportunity to revisit our discussion of the principles set forth by Dr. Jones and his team to guide the university community towards service to the mission. This month, we're talking diversity with TAMUC's Chief Diversity Officer, Dr. Edward Romero. First, though, did you know that A&M Commerce has a rodeo team?
Well, Jared, I knew that.
Well, yeah, yes. You should know that.
If you're just asking me, but I bet a lot of our listeners don't know that. But we do have a rodeo team. And they've just finished their first season of competition. And by coincidence, as well as by design, the advisor to the rodeo team is also Dr. Edward Romero. So before we talk about diversity, we're going to learn a little bit about rodeo.
That's right.
Here at A&M Commerce. Our other guest for this segment is Dr. Daryl Harp, who is the interim head of the newly created School of Agriculture, which as of the Board of Regents meeting last week is official. So, Dr. Harp, congratulations on that. I don't know if you've gotten the news yet. But let's talk rodeo. We're right here in the middle of horse country in northeast Texas. I've had people tell me that there's more horses here than there are in Kentucky, and which I spread that. I don't know if it's true or not, but it sure does sound good. But I can say we do have a lot of horses, and we do have a lot of interest in rodeo. So, Dr. Romero, let me ask you first, where did the idea for this come from, and kind of where are we in the development of the program?
The rodeo program really started, the idea really started from students who showed up at our campus in May of 2013. Unbeknownst to us, we had several students, transfer students at that, who were attending A&M Commerce, who were rodeoing independently for the university, per se. Once that meeting was held, there was a number of students that wanted to start a club, and the dean in the College of Science, Engineering, and Agriculture and myself and several students met and discussed the possibility of having a program. And then fast forward to September of 2013, there was a number of students who, in addition to the ones that we met in May, decided to want to rodeo and took it forward to you, sir, and decided that it was probably the best thing for the institution in terms of our location, in mm-hmm. terms of the sport of rodeo. And so that's really where we started the program.
Yeah, I think it's important, Jared, to note that this is something students wanted. And this was really just an idea. It wasn't our idea. They came up with it, and we said, yeah, it sounds great. It sounds like a good fit, and let's do what we can. And we were so fortunate to have Dr. Romero with us, who already has experience in this area. Dr. Harp, let me ask you, how does rodeo fit in with your plans for the School of Agriculture and kind of the academic side of the house?
I think as we move forward, one of the things that we're always looking for is opportunities for our students. Rodeo does that a couple of ways. Number one, it reaches our target audience. The students that we're recruiting are going to be going to these rodeos. They do it as a pastime. Many of them rodeoed in high school, even though they may not be competing at the college level. And so we have good opportunities to reach those students. But also the facilities that come along with that, the opportunities for those students, be it through scholarships. Many of these students, higher education is becoming more expensive. And so through scholarships that we're able to offer these students, it brings them in. And it again, the facilities that go along with it also have outreach. They allow us to do more in our animal science programs, do more with our new equine studies program that is beginning in the next fall. And so just creates so many more opportunities for so many students across the board and throughout the region.
Yeah, we might allow ourselves a slight digression here and talk a little bit about the equine studies program. That, too, was approved last week at the Board of Regents. We have a couple more approvals to go through. But that will only be the second equine studies degree, Bachelor of Science in Equine Studies, in the state of Texas. And what do you think the prospects for that, for the success of that degree are?
I think they are tremendous. We've had students, this is my 11th year here, and every year we've had students that are interested in a major in equine. And it's something that they come in, they're passionate about that field. Some of them grew up in that industry.
Right.
And for them to finally be able to find that as a profession is a tremendous opportunity for us. And the fact that we're going to be one of two institutions in the state that has that now, mm-hmm. and especially to be able to work with the equine industry that currently exists in Dallas, Rockwall, Collin County, and all of Northeast Texas is just a tremendous opportunity for our institution and our students.
Oh, this is kind of a vast subculture, and it's unless you're in it, I guess you don't really know that it's there. But a month or so ago, I had the pleasure of touring a large horse ranch down near Lone Oak. And it was amazing, you know, just the scope of the operation and the sophistication of the management structure and the quality of the stock that they were breeding there. And it was incredible.
They are tremendous opportunities. And we have equine farms and ranches that are here that are in the region mm-hmm. that are selling horses internationally.
Right.
And it is a tremendous marketplace that we have the ability to tap into.
And these are not horses that you buy for a couple hundred dollars just to ride on the weekends.
No, this is not your trail horse anymore.
Right.
These are really, really fine animals.
Yeah. Well, back to rodeo. Dr. Romero, had, I think, five or six rodeos this spring, right, that our team competed in?
That's correct. Every year we have five rodeos in the spring, typically, and five rodeos in the fall.
Right.
And college rodeo is sanctioned by the National Intercollegiate Rodeo Association. And so there are requirements for every region to have a set number of rodeos, and that current number is 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had all of our students attend all of the rodeos for the most part over the last academic year. And we were fortunate to have one student, Slater Honeycutt, who finished second in the region in the Saddle Bronc mm-hmm. and will be representing the university in Casper, Wyoming in June during the College National Finals Rodeo.
Which is incredible. In our inaugural season, we've already produced a national qualifier. And we had another young lady, I understand, who came very, very close.
Yes, we did. She was very close in qualifying to the College National Finals as well. And several other students who were really close. In terms of requirements, they take the top three individuals in the region in each of the nine events that is sponsored by NIRA. And they also take the top two teams to the College National Finals as well.
Right. Well, we'll all be cheering on Slater come June, and he's off to Casper. And it's pretty incredible that in this first season we've already had such great results. I was at a meeting yesterday and was with a number of presidents of the community colleges in the region. And many of them have very robust rodeo programs. And several, in fact, are going to Casper for the finals. And it's just another great opportunity for us to provide those students a seamless pathway to a four-year degree and still do the thing that they love the most. Dr. Harp, I know we've invested a lot of resources in our equine facility. And actually, Dr. Romero, the same question goes to you, too, as well, because you've been involved in the planning. What do you see in the future in terms of our equine studies campus, I guess, for lack of a better word, out on the farm?
Well, I envision that we, at some point in the future, given where we are and where we're planning on going with our program, to have eventually a rodeo sports complex mm-hmm. that incorporates we have a current riding arena, rodeo arena right now, but we have some issues with drainage and so forth, so we want to relocate that arena and then also add stables for the rodeo athletes that are bringing horses to A&M Commerce, and then also incorporate eventually classrooms and bathrooms and concessions so that we can have clinics and workshops that are related to rodeo, as well as additional venues so that we can have people congregate around the equine facilities for high schools and junior colleges and so forth.
Right.
On the academic side, one thing is that we are lucky enough, and we thank Dr. Jones and the provost office for helping us hire a new assistant professor to take mm-hmm. over the equine science program. And one of the things that along with the new facilities that are going to be out there, I think we have a real opportunity to make A&M Commerce, the repository for equine science and equine-related information for Northeast Texas. And I think our new assistant professor is going to help mold that into that.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely. This is going to be a center of excellence. So, Jared, the short answer is, do you know there's a rodeo team? You bet there is.
That's right. That's right. And I grew up in Wolf City, and a lot of folks use Wolf City, Texas, just down the road, and a lot of folks used rodeo as a verb. Now I'm hearing it used as a verb even here, and I know that rodeo is a thing that you do in addition to a thing that you can consume here in Northeast Texas, which is
exactly.
exciting.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Harp, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And
thank
Dr.
you.
Romero, hopefully you and Dr. Jones will stick around. When we come back, we're going to talk about the concept of diversity as a guiding principle at Texas A&M University Commerce. You're listening to The President's Perspective only on your station, 88.9 KETR. Welcome back to The President's Perspective on 88.9 KETR, monthly half-hour chat with the CEO of TAMUC, Dr. Dan Jones. I'm Jared Knight. As a guiding principle for this institution, the charge of diversity reads, foster a culture of inclusion which attracts to our university highly qualified students, faculty, and staff who represent the diversity of the region we serve and who will engage with us in the pursuit of our university's vision and mission.
That's right, Jared. Diversity is one of our seven guiding principles. And in some ways, it's the most complex because diversity is one of those terms which does not have a simple definition.
Right.
I think we all talk about diversity as a good thing, and it's important that we pursue that as an ideal. We talk about the deficits in diversity in higher education, close up, but more broadly in our nation as a whole. But if we're gonna get our arms around the whole notion of diversity, I think it's important that we first come up with some kind of a definition. And it's a working definition, recognizing that there's other ways to describe the elephant. But and that's why Dr. Romero is joining us for the second half as well. This is his professional area, and he has some very interesting notions about how we tackle this challenge of diversity. So, Dr. Romero, let me just put the question to you directly. What is diversity? How would you define it?
Well, as you mentioned, there's a number of definitions out there. If you Google the word diversity, there's a number of definitions that pop up. And one of the definitions that I've been sharing with the university community is really a simple definition, but it encompasses a number of different elements. And so I'll just go ahead and let you know it's a collective mixture characterized by differences and similarities that are applied in pursuit of organizational objectives. And so when we talk about diversity, we have to go back and look at the organizational objectives, i.e. the mission and the vision of the institution, in order for it to be meaningful and institutional. We understand that diversity is more than just race and ethnic diversity. We also look in higher ed. We look at a number of areas related to diversity, which are, for example, education, work styles, communication styles, family status. Of course, in addition to age, sexual orientation, mental, physical abilities, gender, ethnicity, and so forth.
Right. And, of course, I would add to that long and, never finished list, learning styles, diversity in learning styles. That's certainly an area in which educational institutions have to be very active because so much research in recent years has shown that students learn in so many different ways. And if we are not accommodating those learning styles, and we're not really teaching.
Right.
So it is a challenge. I want to return, though, to your initial definition, which is how diversity functions in pursuit of organizational objectives. And I think that's so important for us to keep in mind because at the end of the day, what we're talking about, in addition to equity, in addition to fairness and justice, is accomplishing our mission as an institution. And our ability to do that is enhanced by enhancing the diversity of those who are sitting around the table. So I think that's an important notion to build upon. We've heard a lot, or at least I've heard a lot in recent days, about the absence of women in CEO positions in corporate America.
Right.
And how that's been tackled as a fairness issue and an equity issue, and certainly it is one. But there's a growing awareness that without women around the table on boards and in CEO positions, we're not really maximizing an organization's problem-solving capabilities or its creative abilities. And that's where diversity really pays off in terms of helping an institution accomplish its mission. Let's get back, let's narrow the focus a little bit to race and ethnicity. That, again, during the break, we were talking about how the diversity, at some point in the discussion, always circles back to that, partly because of the wealth of data surrounding race and ethnicity. And the data are pretty daunting, both in Texas and the nation. Dr. Romero, what is your sense of what the demographic trends are showing us in terms of where we're headed as a nation in terms of racial and ethnic diversity?
Well, I think anyone who is out and about in higher ed and the community in general will know that there is a large demographic shift in not only in Texas but in our country in terms of the Hispanic or Latino population that's just expanding, booming in some cases,
right,
especially in Texas. You have some states like New Mexico that are 42%, 43%, 45% Hispanic, and then you have other states like Texas that have large numbers of Hispanics. How do you incorporate that into higher education, and how do you reach out to those particular populations is really a tough question sometimes that we have to ask ourselves, and how we incorporate that particular effort into educating more Hispanics. Because that's where our country is going. That's where Texas is going.
Right. That's no longer the future. That's the present. And it doesn't. You don't have to dive very deeply into the data to discover that, A, Texas is now a majority-minority state. B, we are well on track to becoming a majority-Hispanic state. We'll probably be the second in the nation behind California. And C, that the Hispanic demographic is the portion of the overall population that has the lowest educational attainment, the lowest income, and the least social mobility. That's scary stuff. If we don't do something to address that, then our nation, and Texas will be at the forefront of this, is headed in a direction that that we don't want to head. You know, we want to be globally competitive, and we want to make sure that the United States continues to lead the world in innovation. And to do that, we've got to educate everybody. So here's a tough question, Dr. Romero. How do you do that?
Well, I would like to add, too, that the Hispanic population, in addition to those areas that you mentioned, is also the youngest population.
Yes.
in the country. So when you look at populations of 18-year-olds and younger, it's going to be the Hispanic population. And
right.
So if you look at the schools and just the demographic data in and of itself, when you see that data where the majority of these students are in elementary and middle school, and you fast forward 5 to 10, 15 years, and where those students are going to be projected to be, we need to prepare ourselves institutionally to reach out to those students and help them to become educated,
right,
for a number of different reasons, socially, economically, for the state, and for the country.
Yeah, and the numbers are very compelling. Dallas Independent School District is approaching 80-85% Hispanic in terms of the total public school population in DISD, and in some districts, particularly in the urban districts, that's where you see it. Of course, that's where families flock because that tends to be where the job opportunities are. But even out here in rural Northeast Texas, we're seeing that as well, kind of after the fact, but we're kind of seeing the second and third waves. And you're absolutely right. It's the children. As they say, children represent 25% of the population and 100% of the future. And if we don't do something to reverse and redirect some of these trends, we're going to be in trouble. One other element of diversity that bears merit, and it correlates with the ethnic diversity, is socioeconomic. The latest numbers I've seen in Texas public school students is, and these numbers are a couple years old, so I think they're probably higher now, about 55% of Texas school children meet one or more definitions of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that in itself brings challenges, learning challenges, lifestyle circumstances, and so forth. So we have to cast a pretty wide net if we're going to tackle this. So back to the big question. Rather than say, how do you solve it in 30 seconds or less, let's talk about some of the things we're doing here at A&M Commerce to try to make a difference.
There's a number of departments across campus that are doing different activities, but one of the things that is on campus that is in the Division of Student Access and Success is our Hispanic Outreach Office.
Mm-hmm.
That they do a lot of outreach to Hispanic families, and they can speak the language, and they can reach out to these students and families to talk about the importance of getting an education, how to pay for an education, and so forth. I think that's one of the things that's critical in helping families, not only the students, but also families,
right,
understand the importance of obtaining an education in higher ed.
And I think, you know, I would just tag on to that some of the things that, quote, traditional, I'm doing the air quotes thing here, Jared, students are kind of grow up knowing how to do is, you know, how to apply to college.
Right.
And it's just sort of something you do. Well, if you come from a family where no one's done that, it's a pretty daunting process.
Right, right.
Another thing we do here is we sit down with parents and we work through all the forms and make sure they actually make it
right
through the entire
all this
thing.
Under the heading of accessibility, because that's kind of the number one thing, isn't it? Being able to afford it, being understanding how to get involved in higher education, and then making sure that there are no hurdles, that the only hurdles to a higher education, especially in the history of this institution, are you know, within yourself. I mean, we really
right.
do try to make things as widely accessible as possible.
Absolutely.
And so that's one way that this institution, I think, is always tackling the problem of inclusion when it comes to demographic variables and socioeconomic variables and everything else. I've always been impressed with how we take all comers. Anyone who wants to learn something can learn something here.
That was Professor Mayo's commitment, and we're staying true to it.
Just a real quick a shout out to Dr. Romero's presentation that he's given across campus to kind of bring everybody up to speed, kind of get everyone on the same page with regard to diversity. We don't have time to go into it here, but I think that was a very valuable piece, and I think that more folks within the university community and the wider community and the Northeast Texas community who kind of understand what diversity is and the way that we're letting that shape the direction that we go in from an institutional standpoint here in North Texas, both as an educational institution and as the second largest employer in the region, it may kind of help everybody to get on the same page and we can all grow together, which I think
right.
is exciting.
Yep.
Dr. Romero, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Jones, as always, it was a pleasure.
Pleasure's all mine, Jared.
The President's Perspective is produced in association with Texas A&M University Commerce at KETR Studios in historic Binion Hall. You can find archives of this program by visiting KETR.org and mousing over programs. While you're there, click Support This Station in the top right-hand corner and make a monetary contribution to great public radio in Northeast Texas. This is your station, 88.9 KETR. I'm Jared Knight. Thanks for listening.